The Specials. Thanks to the choice of Kathy Burke. Mind of My Own is her autobiography, which is out at the moment. And it's a brilliant book, honestly, because it's yes, it tells the story of Kathy getting into acting, which we'll talk about in just a second. But also, like I said, it's a brilliant love letter to London and growing up in a time that sort of feels like it's past now to a point.
Yeah.
I remember watching the Spandau Ballet documentary, Soul Boys of the Western World. And it was a beautiful piece. Like, I enjoyed the story, but their upbringing and the story of them playing in these old kind of bombed out sites in Islington.
It was
just how they then went to conquer the world was just mind blowing.
Yeah, really, incredible. You know? They lived in the next street.
I was going to say, they'd be around the corner from you.
Yeah, because when we moved out of the flats, because they were renovating the flats, so then we moved to this house off the Essex Road, and I think the Kemp brothers lived two streets along.
Yeah.
They also went to the Anna Scher Theatre where I went, but I didn't meet. I think they'd long gone by the time I joined.
Also, those two have so tall and handsome and statuesque and like,
and
you
I'm not
know,
yeah.
you wouldn't know where to go with them, would you? As a kid, you'd be like looking at them going like, almost otherworldly.
So glamorous. So glamorous.
So tell us about acting. How did you, it was Anna Scher that got you into acting, right?
Yeah, well, we were so lucky, Dermot, that we had this amazing woman who was running this workshop acting school, but it wasn't a school. You sort of went there after school,
right?
And
anyone could go?
Anyone could go. It was a waiting list, so you had to wait. So I put my name on the list when I was 13, and I got in sort of just before my 16th birthday. So it was, nearly 3 years waiting.
Yeah.
And then when I eventually did get in, it was incredible. You know, this woman just was extraordinary. The way she commanded the room, the way, 50 kids in a class from different walks of life, and the silence when she walked in, I'd never experienced that, like the respect for a teacher.
And she was softly spoken Irish lady.
Softly spoken Irish, and you were taught a lot about empathy, really, because she said the skill to improvisation is listening. And it was all about be a good audience. And it was very much, it's not all about you and your voice and shout, shout, shout. You know, you have to listen. And, it was quite extraordinary. And I never looked back, really, once I started there.
Quite something as well. Like you said, you go on the waiting list when you're 13. You don't get there till you're 16. It's incredibly, everyone's so self-conscious at that age.
Yeah.
And suddenly to be somewhere where someone encourages you to let go of any of those boundaries. Which is a big ask for a kid that age, I suppose.
It is. I mean, I never forget. It's just things like, because kids didn't go there just because they wanted to be actors. Mm. Kids were sort of sent there sometimes by doctors and therapists and stuff, if kids had terrible problems. And I never forget one young lad who had a really bad stutter. And within a couple of months, this stutter was gone.
Yeah.
He'd learned how to deal with it and take control of it, really, which was just beautiful.
So off the back of that, then where did the first role? Because basically it was a great almost factory for the EastEnders cast, wasn't it? So many people went there and then went on to do these serial drama, which is itself an incredible discipline. To do the amount of pages you're doing every day when you're doing EastEnders is, I think, always is underrated for me.
Oh, the soap actors, yeah, it's very underrated, yeah.
But you chose not to go down that route, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
which is quite something, because you don't know what you're betting on yourself to a point, aren't
you?
Yeah,
yeah, but I knew I needed sort of variety, really. I didn't want to be stuck in one place. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't money motivated, even though I didn't have any money. I wasn't sort of motivated, well, this would be a chance to make a lot of money if you go into something like EastEnders, that you've got a regular wage, which is sort of unheard of in our profession. But that didn't interest me at all. It sort of frightened me, actually. And I didn't really want to be famous. I was very nervous about that. You know, when you're a kid, you think, oh, fame, that'd be amazing. Mm. but I get it makes me quite self-conscious. It's only as I've got older, really, and I'm not really an actor anymore, that I can sort of deal with being sort of very quietly, domestically, a certain age group know me. Do you know what I mean? So I can get
the
on
most
the bus.
Comfortable definition of fame, absolutely.
I can get on the bus now, you know, because I won't get screamed at by school kids, you know.
All right, next choice. You've got Proclaimers, On My Way, or Fiesta by the Pogues.
Well, see, the thing about Fiesta, I mean, I love the Proclaimers. I saw their very early gigs in London and they were amazing, blew my mind. But the thing about the Pogues and Fiesta, I was sort of there because Shane McGowan wrote Fiesta while we were in Almeria making a film with Alex Cox. And while we were
sounds,
there,
which, by the way, could be a whole show, the making
of
that film.
Oh, my goodness, that film. And, but anyway, outside our hotel room was a fairground that used to go on way into the middle of the night that had this constant, oh, we know what you're gonna, oh, we know what you're gonna, da la 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 la. And it drove me insane. And then, but then it was sort of like, oh, how lovely. A few months later, when this track came out.
Right.
So it's got to be Fiesta.
There we go.
Oh,
the only song we're allowed to play by the Pogues. It's such a nice tune. It's lovely. I didn't know that was the story behind it as well. And also that you know James and Jem really well from the band, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Well, they're the ones that I got the closest to. And James... Well, James has lived in America for years with his lovely wife, Danielle, and... yeah, and Jem and his fantastic partner, Marcia, I see them as much as I can, really.
They were just... Because one of my first gigs without my mum and dad was the Pogues at Brixton Academy.
Oh.
With Shane. And then they sacked him. And then I remember turning up the year later and we were like, well, who's going to be doing the singing then? And it was Joe Strummer. We were like, oh, I'm going to miss you. And then now I look back and go, I saw Joe Strummer play with the Pogues.
Yes.
It was like one of the best gigs of my life.
Amazing.
Kathy, where did... when did you... I didn't say when you know you made it, but when was the kind of... I can't believe I've got a gig. This is great. I've got my first gig in a movie, or I felt secure. I know that money didn't motivate you, but actually you could call yourself an actor.
Oh, gosh, what a question. I don't know, really. I think it might have been when I did a play at the Royal Exchange Theatre in Manchester.
Yeah.
And I was in a great play called Amongst Barbarians by a guy called Michael Wall. And it was really ahead of its time. It was very hard-hitting, about two young boys who get caught smuggling drugs in Malaysia. And it was about their families coming out to try and get them stopped from being hung, basically. Yeah. It was the death sentence. I think I was about 24, and I'd auditioned for so many plays, new writing plays, and I never got the jobs. And, you know, and it was always like you wanted to work at places like the Royal Court. The Royal Court weren't interested in me because they didn't fancy me, basically. So, and I probably wasn't very good, but I think that came into it a bit. And, but then finally, you know, getting a part in a play at the Royal Exchange in Manchester.
Yeah.
That's when I thought, oh, at last, now I feel like a proper actor.
Yeah, lovely. And I love this full circle story as well. I mean, what I've always loved about you is your choices, but I love this full circle story of you Neil Weymouth. You have to go to Cannes. You don't even know you're going to Cannes.
No. Well, I did know once I was on my way there, but no, that was all out of the blue. Yes.
And you don't even have a passport, but different times. So
it was before 9/11, so it was sort of a little bit, you know, I don't know, rules were broken. Yeah. And private jets and helicopters and all sorts to get me at the ceremony. Because
before you know it, you get the award, you come back, and the first place you go is Anna Shears.
Yes, I was really pleased about that. Well, because it was a Monday morning coming back, and myself and my then agent, Stephen, and the way we were, the driver was taking us back, I went, oh, hang on a minute. Can we just do a little stop off? Because it was about 10 o'clock in the morning, and that's when Anna's office opened. So we went, I rang on the doorbell and I went, it's Kath. And Anna was like, oh, darling. So I went up there and showed her the certificate, whatever yeah. it is, you know, the Cannes Award. And it was lovely. I'm really glad I did that. Yeah. She was very, very touched.
And then with all the theatre directing and everything, Kath, you know what comes back to me is this love and need of reading as well, and how important, because yes. actually it kind of resonated a lot with me. My dad used to take me to the library in Colchester every Saturday morning. It was,
lovely.
It was our ritual.
Yes.
And it was very special times.
Yeah.
And now you're an ambassador for the Literacy Trust as well, aren't you?
Yes, for the National Year of Reading,
yeah.
along with lovely Marcus Rashford and yourself, I think.
Yeah, I've done a bit for him, yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah, I think reading is incredibly important. I did think this week, you know, did you see that wonderful news snippet of the young girl that... because of social media being banned for the under 16s, and there was a BBC News report where they went into a school,
yes.
and there was a young girl yes. there, and the lady said to the reporter said to her, "So what are you going to do now? You can't look at social media," and she just said, "I'll stare at the wall." And I mean, it was so funny. Yeah. She was brilliant, but I thought, no, don't stare at the wall, babe. Get a book. Get a book. Go to the library. You yeah. know, there are some great books.
It's kind of your salvation, I think, growing up, wasn't it? The bookstore, Camden Passage and the Essex Road Library.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in them places so much. You know, they were such a part of my childhood, mm. particularly the library.
Yeah.
And the Little Angel Bookshop. I don't think it was called Little Angel. I think I'm mixing it up with the Puppet Theatre. But it was the Angel Bookshop that was in Camden Passage.
Yeah.
And they were really kind because I couldn't afford to buy books. But they'd let me sit on the little step by the children's section and just sit there and have a little read,
oh, that's nice. That's
which was really kind, yeah.
Kath, thank you so much. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you.
Kathy Burke, Mind of My Own, is out now. Sally, have you met Kathy?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
We have. Lovely Sal.
I
yeah.
think you're amazing. You were saying earlier that you wanted to be famous. Did it live up to what you thought it was going
to
be?
Oh, no, I didn't,
she
want,
didn't
want to
be famous.
Oh, sorry, you didn't want to be famous.
No, no.
So, but you kept your private life quite private.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you've navigated it well,
that's volume
you?
Two.
I don't think anyone's that interested in my private life, to be quite honest.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Dermot. All right.